Programming sponsored by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Over 100% financing on auto loans. Where you bank does matter.
Discovering our extraordinary God in the ordinary things of life. Welcome to St. Joseph's Workshop with Father Matthew Spencer on Relevant Radio.
Formerly the Priory of St. Andrew, you probably never heard it called that before. Formerly, or I should say after that, the Cathedral Church of Christ and the Blessed Virgin Mary. What a name. Getting both Jesus and the Blessed Mother there. You probably haven't heard of it under that name either, but you may have heard in recent days of the Rochester Cathedral. Welcome to St. Joseph's Workshop. I've been thinking about this cathedral, which formerly was a Catholic cathedral, actually was under the episcopacy of John Fisher, St. John Fisher, who died defending his fidelity to the Catholic faith in Rochester, England. This particular cathedral has come into the news recently. James, have you seen this? Karen? You probably, Karen has. James is not up on his news inside of the church and social media stuff. It was a couple days ago that some pictures of Rochester Cathedral, I prefer the former name, Cathedral Church of Christ and the Blessed Virgin Mary, but that's not what it's under the patronage of anymore. The Rochester Cathedral posted some pictures about an event that they were hosting. Did they already host it? I think they must have already hosted it because they were tweeting about it 3 days ago. They emptied out now you got to imagine, this is a cathedral built in the 600s, built in 604. This amazing structure with this just flying high ceiling there. I don't know my architectural terms. I mean, I think the stained glass window structures are Gothic arches, but inside they don't look like Gothic arches. Anyway, I'm not an architect and don't have an history in church architecture or a degree in the history of church architecture, but it's a phenomenal looking cathedral. They posted pictures. They emptied it out in order to prepare for an event of mini golf. Putt-putt, to bring people off the street into, like, no joke, that's what it is. James can't believe it, but that's what they did. They had a number of different, I'm sorry, can I just be real honest here? It's not even like a good-looking mini golf game. It's just a very small, has fake grass on there. We're talking inside the cathedral, my friends. They have a theme. I'm bringing this up really not to criticize the Church of England. I don't know who made this final decision. I saw many priests, Anglican priests online, also very upset about this. So this is ruffling a lot of feathers. I saw one priest say, hey, I was ordained in this church. I'm really upset that they're doing this to the church. This mini golf game has a particular feature that the Rochester Cathedral chose, which is building bridges. So each hole on the course. It's been a long time since I've played mini golf. I think like 7 years ago I played mini golf with the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist. But that was the last time. No kidding, I have some pictures of that even for evidence in case James doesn't really believe me. Building bridges is the theme. At each hole, they have different architectural types of bridges. Some modern, some old, some traditional, some not so traditional. And then in recent days, they've been posting pictures of people coming into the church playing golf. The idea that they had is a noble idea, to bring people that aren't going to church back into their cathedral. I mean, don't we all want that? Is this the way to do it? I don't think so. I mean, Damian Thompson, the former editor of the Catholic Herald, I don't think he's with them anymore, if I recall. He said St. John Fisher, Bishop of Rochester, went to his death rather than watch his cathedral fall into the hands of the iconoclasts. I suspect, he says, I would rather see it lie in ruins than experience this fate. I don't know. I can't speak for St. John Fisher, but it surely is sad to me to see a place which was formerly where the Roman Catholic liturgy was celebrated, now to be used for such secular purposes. I understand. I mean, I understand the desire that we have as Christians to attract people back to the faith. And as I said, I think that's an important goal. Do we use our worship spaces to do that, though? Can I share with you why I'm talking about this? To me, this is just an example, because, again, I don't know who made these decisions. Who am I to judge and point and decide how the Anglicans should use their churches? But what I was thinking about was this, a particular story, a particular event that took place in my life just this past weekend. I was at the Shrine of St. Joseph, Guardian of the Redeemer in Santa Cruz, California, which is on the cliffs of the Pacific Ocean, just this magnificent place. It's where I live. Just saying, it's a pretty nice place. Nice digs. James, you were just here a few weeks ago. You appreciate kind of the beauty of this place. I was walking into our home where the Oblates of St. Joseph live when some tourists were walking by on the street, just across the street. Just a father and a daughter were walking down the beautiful cliffs of the ocean, appreciating the beautiful weather. And they saw the residences or the houses that are on the property. They saw the church, they saw the gardens, and they couldn't believe it. And they saw me walking by, and we connected. And they're asking questions about the architecture. They're asking questions about, well, how old are these houses? Some of them historic, which the Oblates of St. Joseph, you know, picked up years and decades ago. And I led them from, well, okay, Victorian houses, that's nice. That's not our treasure, my friends. I wanted to lead them to the Eucharist. These were people who were not Catholic, or at least the father said, well, I was raised Catholic, I was baptized Catholic, but I haven't stepped foot in a Catholic church for a while, he said. We're walking through the beautiful gardens. We get to the Shrine of St. Joseph itself. I said, come on in, let me show you inside of the church. And this is the most beautiful part of what we have as Catholics. It's not the old structures that we have. It's Jesus himself. Of course, our worship spaces and the beauty of our worship spaces are really important. But let's go before Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, and we enter into the church. Can I tell you what stood out to them first? The first impression that they had, because the church was rather dark. It was in the afternoon. The lights had been off, and yet the sun was shining brilliantly through the stained glass windows that we have. I mean, these vibrant blues and reds and greens. I mean, the place was flooded with the colors of the stained glass that was there. And that was what caught their attention right off the bat. They said, my goodness, we haven't seen stained glass windows like that in ages. Can I tell you about something before I go on too far? I want to make this educational for each one of us. Have you ever heard of the Perkinje effect? I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's a Czech scientist, I believe. He did a lot of research on human vision and what you and I can see. There is a particular effect of human vision that he outlined and described, which today we understand very well, which is as light gets dimmer and dimmer, your cones and rods in your eyes see things differently. The classic example of this are geranium flowers. I know you're thinking, I thought we were talking about cathedrals. I thought we were talking about stained glass windows. Stick with me, okay? I'm going to get back to these very important theological points here. You know what geranium flowers look like. Imagine red geraniums. They have dark green leaves on them. And when you're looking at them in daylight, the red is very bright and the green seems very dark. Do you know what's very interesting is that as the sun sets, as twilight begins to overtake your house, as you're looking at those geraniums, what happens is that the red geraniums all of a sudden begin to look very dark and the green leaves begin to look very light. It's a very interesting, very curious optical illusion. You've lived with this your whole life. It's not an optical illusion. It's just how your eyes work. That as we get less and less light directed towards our eyes, we see colors differently. Why am I saying this? Because when you walk into a dark church, the way that you see the stained glass windows is different. The contrast in the colors, it's different. The vibrancy of those windows, and that's because of the Purkinje effect. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, we were making stained glass windows before we even knew about this effect, before we even knew about cones and rods in our eyes. But we as Catholics, we've known about this for centuries. Since probably the 10th century, I think, is when stained glass windows probably came from the Orient to Europe, and when the Europeans perfected the technique. And why do we do it? Just in order to make people, when they walk into our churches, look up and go, wow, that light is awesome. That color is amazing. To look up and say, wow, the Purkinje effect. I'm amazed at the vibrancy. No, of course not. It's to direct people's attention to the beautiful, to the true, and to the good. It's to lift our minds and our hearts up from this valley of tears and to focus us on God, who is truth, goodness, and beauty himself. See, stained glass windows are intended, yes, to communicate beauty, but beyond just the beautiful colors that they depict and represent and inspire in us, they're meant to communicate catechetical truths as well. You think of the beautiful rose window in the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Gratefully, that amazing rose window spared in the recent fire that took place in Notre Dame. That is a catechetical tool. Every spoke of that rose window reminds us of a different theological element. The stained glass windows that you see in old cathedrals all across Europe, as well as the newer modern stained glass windows that you'll see in your parish, are intended to remind us of stories of Scripture, of the lives of the saints, of the truths of God himself. I don't know if you knew this. Just a few days ago, Father Stephen and I, we were talking about Ad Orientem, celebration of the liturgy, where the priest traditionally faces liturgical east towards the rising sun. Did you know that since Christianity spread so rapidly in the northern hemisphere, when you are facing east, the north, of course, is to your left. And so what often happened is that, and the north is traditionally associated with darkness and cold, at least in European cultures. And so they would oftentimes put the Old Testament themes on the northern side of old cathedrals. So they would put depictions of scripture passages from the Old Testament on the northern side of the church. And on the southern side, because the sun would oftentimes come through more easily that way, just because of the location of the church on the globe, it would be lighter. They would put the New Testament narratives there. Interesting. Have you ever noticed that, James? I don't think many churches do that anymore. I think oftentimes they're thematic. You might see in churches depictions of, say, the 15 or 20 decades of the Rosary. You might see depictions of the works of mercy. That's a popular one after the Second Vatican Council. You might see various different theological and catechetical elements communicated to us through stained glass. I'm saying all this because, can I be honest? I'm always honest with you, but can I be direct and share with you my opinion? When I saw people golfing inside of an ancient Catholic cathedral, which I know is not under Catholic services now. When I saw that, I was looking at people. You know, golfing, just by its very nature, forces your attention down to the ground. You have to look at the ball. You have to focus on your swing. you have to look and see where the trajectory is, but really what do I know about golf? I don't know the first thing about golf, but I see golfers. I know how to watch golf on TV, and I see they're looking down until they swing, until they connect, when they start to look out, which is the complete opposite of what a cathedral is meant to do, which is to raise your vision up. It's one of the reasons why old churches have such high ceilings. It's just a beautiful in architecture, but it's to draw your attention up. If you go to any old cathedral that has such high vertical roofs, that's part of it, is a reminder that our souls are seeking to rise, to ascend, to connect with something so much higher than ourselves, to transcend the darkness and evil that we experience here on earth. That's why I see golfing inside of cathedrals and think that's not really what it's about. That's not really what you and I are called to use these spaces for. Is it sacrilege? Is it desecration? I've seen these words thrown out quite a bit. I don't know. I mean, desecration is oftentimes reserved. I could share with you the Catholic Encyclopedia definition of desecration, which says, desecration is the loss of that peculiar quality of sacredness which inheres in places and things in virtue of the constitutive blessing of the church. It's a complicated way of saying that when a place or a thing is blessed, set apart, made sacred, that if there is something that is completely contrary to that sacred action that takes place, then there is a desecration, right? A taking away of that sacred character that's there. When a very heinous crime and a terrible sin happens inside of, say, a church, a cathedral, a place that has been set aside, then in fact it needs to be reconsecrated. It needs to be set aside again. Is that the case when something rather profane takes place like this? I think it's rather different. I'm not trying to say one way or the other, but I don't like throwing around those terms loosely. To me, to use those terms, there are theological, canonical implications of those. But I understand the sentiment. I understand how people feel about it. And I can tell you the Church of England is facing like major backlash for this, not only the Rochester Cathedral, but people all across the globe, especially adherents of Anglicanism, are looking and saying, what are we doing here? Who gets to decide that these spaces, which have such a long tradition and a long history in our church, can be used this way? You know what I find myself thinking about is not so much the churches that belong to other to other groups, but instead the churches that belong to our church, the one holy Catholic Apostolic Roman Church. And I wonder if you and I appreciate the sacred nature of our churches. We appreciate the beauty of them. I know you do. When you go into your church, you can recognize the sacred art that's there, I hope depicted prominently, tastefully. I hope your church has beautiful architecture. I hope your church even has this high roof drawing your attention up to God in a way that other structures can't do. Most importantly, I hope your church has Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament most prominently positioned. My favorite position for the tabernacle is in the center, right there, where we can genuflect, where we see, where we don't have to look around and hunt, where is Jesus here, and look for the sanctuary lamp there. That's the most important part of our churches. I wonder if you appreciate that. I won't put this on you. I wonder if we appreciate that as much as we should. It's very easy for us to go into church and to keep keep the conversations going outside of the church, bring them inside of the church, and forget about the sacred nature of that worship space. It's easy for us to schedule rather, and I use this word, I know it's a strong word, but if you look at the definition of it, many of the activities that we do can be profane in the sense that they're just secular. They're not sacred things. Are we careful about that? Are we careful about preserving reverence in our church? For the purpose of you and I focusing our lives on Christ, for the purpose, for the intent of, it's not in order to quash people's own aspirations and the joy that they might experience coming into that space, but rather to realize that these places of worship have a very special character imparted to them, called down from heaven upon them by the blessing that takes place in these sacred spaces, intended for us to truly be able to enter into prayer there. I think, you know, in my experience, there are some places where we do this really well. There are some pastors, some bishops, some rectors of cathedrals and of churches that do this very well. And then there are other places that I think we could do a better job on. I don't know of any church I've seen where we've set up golf courses in them inside of the Catholic Church. And I'm grateful for that. But I think there's probably a lot of work that you and I could do. I think there's a lot of work we could do in our parishes. There's a lot of temptation to make a lot of noise in them, to not be careful about allowing people to pray, allowing people to be transformed by the beauty that they encounter in these spaces. And I know you're listening to Father Matthew saying, "I didn't know you were so old school, Father. I didn't know you were so medieval." So in the, I don't know. Yeah, if the shoe fits, I guess I got to wear it. This is just how I see our churches and our worship spaces. They're so important, set aside for our encounter with Christ. It's not that the community is bad. It's not that relating to each other and exchanging wonderful holy dialogue is bad. I love that too. It's just that there's a place for that. There's a place for those community events that are not the public worship of the church, and those are not inside of the church there. So I think, you know, I'm just thinking about how we as Catholics, you know, could recover the sense of the true, the good, and the beautiful. How you and I could be more attentive and more careful ourselves. I have to tell you, I think the way that this happens is not so much by rules and being imposed from the outside. It's true, churches have to have certain norms, and churches are going to have ushers that are trying to preserve peace and some sense of decorum. And it's likely that your pastor will have particular guidelines for what can and cannot be going on in the church. And those are important things to have. But I think the real transformation we're going to see is when individually, you and I are striving to encounter Christ in that special moment when we enter into these sacred places. I think that will attract people off the streets. I think what's amazing is that when people come into our churches to pray, to do something that they've never done before, to have an encounter with beauty, and then be invited to reflect upon their life more, that's going to have a far more tremendous impact in their life than maybe if we remove all the pews and the chairs and use the space for something else completely. Maybe if you and I enter ourselves in prayer and are reverent and are truly attentive to the presence of Christ in the Blessed Sacrament there, it's going to be inviting and welcoming to others. Because that is truly what happens there. Other people are attracted to that. They want that. They want silence. They want an encounter with the transcendent in their life. And they're going to find that in our churches if we work towards that. Okay, coming up, some wise words on generosity and reaping and sowing from the saints. That's up next here in St. Joseph's Workshop.